Accession number 28668, Mr. Frank Rogers, Reel 3. We're talking about your time with the Northamptonshire Regiment depot, the training depot at Wootton Barracks outside Northampton, from January 53 for a while. Now, we're talking about, you know, when you first got there. So you had your haircut. Anything else they did or in that first bit, that, or any other? You didn't have your vaccinations then? Or?
I think we had a tetanus and another one out of about a week, and that was just for starters. And then we started training.
Now, so the vaccinations didn't affect you much then?
I had a bit of a stiff arm, but that's I've never had much.
Nothing.
No problems.
Now, what about? Let's have a look at you. Where they put you? Were you in a hut or in the old barrack room? Or what was it?
The conditions up at Wootton Barracks was one of the best barracks in the country at the time. It was only built in 1940 for the Second World War.
Now, is it a camp or a brick built or
brick? All brick built.
So proper barrack room.
Proper buildings, yeah.
Now, what was your barrack room like? Can you describe how it's laid out? What it was like in there?
It was called 14 East on the door. It was one of the biggest rooms we had for troops, you know, for the intakes. It must have been, I should think it was about 14 to 18 people in it. All with their own bed space, polished floor.
Was it not lino, was it wood?
No, hardwood.
And what was it, on either side of the room or?
Both sides of the room, yeah.
Now what about, this January, any heating?
Yes, yeah, good heating.
What, a stove or central heating?
No, central heating.
And how much space did you have to yourself in there, if any?
About a foot shorter of that, back
so
here.
About 10 foot by 7 or 8 foot.
Yeah.
At most.
Yeah.
And so you've got your bed in there. Do you have a locker or a cupboard?
Locker. A shelf over the top of your bed with all your webbing used to be on there. And the cork out of the watering can used to, any water bottle, the rope has got to be, the string got to be the right length, and look down, it was unbelievable.
We'll come to inspections, yeah. Let's take you through almost a typical day of training. I know there's no such thing, but I mean, just picking up various things. Mm. So, what time would your in this period, when you first arrived, what time would your morning start and how?
I think Valley went about 6:30.
And what was Rivali? Was that a bugle or...?
A bugle, yeah.
And then what?
And then if anybody was lingering in bed, they'd get out and head of bed. And then it was a washroom, well, showers, it was, you know, all the trimmings. And then it'd be down the cookhouse, have your grub, and then get back up to your room, get your gear, what you hadn't done the night before or anything, and there'd be room cleanliness, buffing the floor, checking your equipment, making sure that the rifle rack was in the right place, and remove all the 4x2s out at the end of the rifles because they didn't want any dust to get in them. Some people used to leave them.
Now that's the morning, first part of the morning. Yeah. Now let's just go back to the food. Let's look at all the food together. What did you think of army food then? Breakfast, dinner, tea or whatever you call it, supper. What did you think of the food that you got?
Trying to think of it. Not very good.
Now what was wrong with it?
It was a lot of it was tasteless because a lot of it was steam cooked in them days, I think.
So what would you get for breakfast?
We had bacon, egg or something like that, you know, beans.
What was wrong with that?
Well, it was the way it was mucked about. What way it was cooked, I should say.
So it's not that the ingredients were off or no. Rubbish bacon or anything. It was just the way it was presented to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was... When you think about it in later life, I don't think they could have done it much better with the facilities and the quality of the stuff that was knocking about at that time. It wasn't just the cook's fault, I suppose, but I think some of them could have done with a refresher course.
And what about lunch? What was the average lunch like?
Well, if you was in camp,
at Wootton.
It wasn't bad at all. It was the stews and old boiled potatoes, and you know, and that. It was a good spread of food, you know, varied food. It was just the quality wasn't all that good.
And tea or something?
Tea, and bromide.
Now, was this bromide thing, is that true or not? Or is it just the old rumour?
Put it this way, if they didn't put it in, it was some queer tasting tea. It did have effect on some people, well, most of us. I don't know if it was the extra physical thing we was doing, but I thought I was pretty fit when I went in the army, been working on a building and climbing and all, you know.
So you think there was bromide in it?
Yeah.
It's calmed you down a bit.
Well, it sort of, some people, I thought they were going to die. But no, getting back, I thought there was something in it, yeah, you know, in the bromide.
Now, so that's the food. Now, after breakfast, and you've gone back to your room, you've sorted, you know, the bits and bobs out, and, you know. Yeah. Now, what training sessions might you get in the morning? In the early stage,
it was learning to march.
Now, take me, how did you do with drill? You've done a bit with the sea cadets, but how was this? How did you take to drill in the army?
Well, the instructors, for a start, was a lot keener than the ones that was in the sea cadets.
Now, what do you mean by keener?
They wanted more results in a shorter space of time. And which, you know, you could understand that later on in life, but some of the methods, I mean, I've had NCOs come close as that and call me
within 3 or 4 inches.
Yeah, and I'm not joking either. Oh, and sometimes they give you that.
Prod you.
Mm. And
how were you doing with drill? Because some people just take to it, and some people have got two left feet.
Oh yeah.
How were you? Where were you in this?
I was pretty good at what was going on. Yeah.
Did you understand the point of drill then, as to why you, as a young lad, had to go marching?
I know the army marched, and I thought, we've got to get this right. We've got to look. And what creeps in is that before you start, that you're going to be in 10 weeks, you're going to be fit enough to, smart enough to be on a, what do they call it?
Pass an air parade.
And it said, if you don't get up to that standard, you get back squatted. And I thought, I ain't going to go through this lot again, you know. But we had about three in our platoon that didn't cotton on, or couldn't even swing their arm and swing their leg at the same.
And how were they treated by the drill sergeant?
Their life was misery. They were picked on quite a bit. They was only trying to shock and to push them as far as they could, so they'd conform with what was going on.
Now, so that's drill. What else, you know, taking you through the basic programme, what else do you have to do, say, in the morning? What other sessions might you have?
PT.
Now, PT, that's getting you fit.
There's all
that now. What sorts of PT, your physical training, were you doing?
A lot of blokes wasn't fit when they went in, same as you know, it goes all through their generations, and you've got to be able to do certain things to pass your efficiency for physical fitness, and that was the thing that it was on your mind a bit, cross country, and most blokes, even I hadn't done anything like that.
So what were the cross country runs like?
Pretty good.
How far?
Not far, really. If it was about a mile and a half, I think, 2 miles, I might be exaggerating a bit, but it was enough, you know, for a start off, yeah.
And in your boots?
In boots, yeah.
And what other things, what other PT? Did you have the old Swedish exercise?
Oh, yeah, all that in the gym with the PTIs, yeah, and if anybody done anything wrong, they used to give you a medicine ball and you used to hold it like that above your head, and you just go round the outside of the gym as many times as they said. And I've done that once or twice, and it's not very nice. But that's, you know, they're the sort of things that, you know, they do. And you're monitored, like, your standard as you go through the weeks of training.
What about, did they have an assault course?
Yeah.
Now, what was that like? How bad or good?
The only thing I used to come unstuck was the wall. And they used to, you know, you've got to jump high enough and dig your toes in so you don't bang in the, and grab all the top to pull yourself out. It's all right when you've got nothing on, but when you've got your webbing and a weapon and all that, until you get to when you probably have another assault course, like an easy one and an harder one, where the two of you are giving it one and over the top, but the proper way, sort of thing. But they test you on individual strength. But that's the only, apart from that, that was the...
How about your fitness? You reckoned you were pretty fit. How did you find your fitness measured up to what the army wanted from you?
A little bit strenuous, but, you know, I put a stone on while I was up at Wharton in 10 weeks.
So I presume muscle.
Well, and flab. I don't think the only flab was on the RSM's dog, I think. I don't know.
So, Peter, now, what about weapons training? Okay, I know you wouldn't go very far in the 12 weeks or whatever it was. 10 weeks. What weapons? I mean, perhaps start with a rifle. That's the Lee Enfield still, isn't it?
Yeah, but we started on the miniature range with a.
Tell me about that then.
The miniature range that was at the depot, that's where they started us all firing. To get people used to handling firearms.
Is that a .22?
Yeah.
And is it the Lee Enfield with the
conversion.
Thing in the barrel, the converted
yeah.
one?
Yeah, yeah. It was exactly the same size, but it was a .22.
And were they teaching you properly how to aim and the techniques of aiming and firing, all the business about breathing and aiming? And
oh, running. Yes. That was all took into consideration. And one of the things was, before we started, zero the rifles in, but with a Remy armourer.
How did they do that?
Your eye testing and that. The Remy, I don't know actually the technicals are, but the Remy NCO or officer had set it up on a iPod and he'd line it up. And then he'd ask me to look through there and it might show with my eye, so it might show a different place on the target. And that's what they call zero. And they used to put the little spike on the end of the rifle. It was, you know, adjustable. You put different ones in for different eyesights. Like you can either have a tall one, a small one. And that's about it. Once they zeroed your rifle in, then we graduated from the miniature range to Brinkton, just outside Northampton, was at the open range. And that's where we used to use the 303.
How was it like firing on the range?
Great.
In what way?
Well, it was out of camp for a start, doing something you liked, and I've always been, I've had an odd air gun when I was a kid, nothing set, you know, serious, not joining a club, but the thought of having Rolf sort of give you a bit of a buzz, especially, well, being in the army, I thought, well, you're in the infantry, you've got to, if you didn't get your firing right, you didn't get your stars.
Now, what about, so you weren't bothered by the shock the first time?
Well, it was a bit of a shock, but it was nothing drastic.
Now, what made a good shot, do you think, if you were a reasonable shot? What do you think made eyesight, coordination, breathing, what was it?
A bit of everything. It's, especially your breathing. You know, you control that, and you got to feel comfortable with the weapon. You know, it's like anything you do, you got to have practice. The more practice, the better it gets.
So, what when would you fire with the breathing? What was the sort of pattern you tried to get from the breathing?
If you run from say 300 yards, oh no, 400 yards to 300 yards, and you probably get down there. And you're breaking like a broken down car door, and you sort of get no one to do that because you're waving about. And then when you get down to from 200 yards running, and you're standing up, Well, you think you're waving to somebody sometimes when you're first doing it, but once you get the concentration and you try, you know, you practice it, and you become quite good at it.
And you did the test you? I mean, what did you come out? Oh, yeah. You didn't come out as a marksman, I presume, or did you?
Yeah. You got to be in the infantry. You got to be a marksman on Bren or 303. As long as you've got one marksman on one of them, and then first class on the other one.
Yeah. I'll come back to the Bren. What about cleaning the rifle? I know it. But do you remember how you were taught to clean it? Because it's quite a rigmarole.
Oh yeah, the pulse of the and the bottle that was in the end of the butt, and you have be given two pieces, what they call four by two cloth. And you'd, I think, was it neat or something that you put on just to lubricate? Very, very little, because if you put it on, you'd pick up all the dust. Where's it going? But it got to be something there. And you pull that out. But when we used to get down the range, we used to have, I think it was 7 pints of water to put through the barrel to get all the crap out that was in it.
From firing,
yeah, and cool everything down and that sort of thing.
So this was just, it wasn't boiling water, this is just cold water.
Yeah, and what I can remember of it anyway, I think, yeah, this was done back at barracks, it wasn't done at the range, and then you'd have to clean all your weapon up.
And how did you actually use the pull through and all this?
You've got a lead, well, it's like a lead or a little copper tube, with a string fixed in the back of it, and you drop that down the barrel, and then you made sure the 4x2 was half and half through the loop at the end, and you'd pull that through, and you'd keep pulling that through until you was getting blinded by the condition of the barrel.
And how would they inspect your rifle? Yeah,
you'd put you present like you'd be, and you put your thumb in the where the breech was, not right tight up to the breech, but so it's back, so you get the light there in it, and then probably they'd probably pick you up because you've got a dirty nail. No, but that's how you present it like that, and they can see a reflection of you, and they'd check and whether you've got any spiders or not as they go on.
Now, what about the Bren gun? We mentioned the Bren gun. What about Bren gun training?
Very entertaining, especially when you're blindfolded. You're inside, put one together.
Now, tell me, that's not firing. That's breaking. Tell me about that first. Then, what, I mean, it's quite a complicated gun. It's not like, what did you have to learn to do?
Is to make sure that you got no what's the word?
Stoppages.
Stoppages. There was first one. There's a procedure that any stoppages, cock gun, mag off. That's the golden rule. Then the next one, cock gun, mag off, and then if everything was okay, nothing seen, magazine on, because it might have been a Duff magazine, cock gun, continue firing. If it didn't fire, it was cock gun, it's already cock, take magazine off, gas regulator at the side, and that. You used to do that with the end of a bullet. That's the only thing you got where you could do it. Put it onto a bigger regulation, and then and if that didn't work, you go through the. I think there was about three or four settings on the gas thing. Out of that, you'd then stop your firing, and then they'd get the armour to check it out. But sometimes you had what they call a hard extraction. You couldn't remove. The spent bullet case out of the breech, and that was a bit of a game, getting it, mate.
And what about you learned to strip it down right to its bits, then, did you as well?
We could only take it down as far as like a field weapon. I mean, if you're talking about an armourer's strip down, it's got springs and God knows what all over the place. But you could take it down. You have two barrels, one in your spare parts wallet. I think you had a spring in there. And I think, and also you had your cleaning stuff as well. And I think we had a wooden dowel or something. I don't know where that what that was for. Well, it was, you really got some shit up the barrel, and you could poke it out with it. I mean.
Now, what was it like to fire? What did you think of the Bren on the range? We're right. talking about in action on well, the range.
As, well, compared with the 303, it was beautiful. You got, and there was no recoil on the 303, but the 303 was a good weapon. The Bren was, it was like the deluxe, especially when you could hammer them off. 28 rounds, no problem. Yeah.
How accurate?
Very accurate. Yeah. It's like, again, it's like getting the old, the way you operate it. I mean, you get some idiots that be finding somebody else's target, and bits like that happens, where they can't count them, the targets or not.
But the gun's accurate. It's the
spot on. Oh yeah, yeah.
So that's the Bren. What are the weapons we introduced?
Sten gun.
Now tell me about that.
Crap.
Now why is it crap? What's wrong with it?
The safety recess. You'd only be, say you was walking along a bushy terrain or trees or anything, over, and you happen to catch that against a branch or a bit of a blackberry or something, but where it's like a vine, it'll bring out, take it out of the safety catch, and it'd be away. You wouldn't know where to put them. And they were good.
Were you aware, and did they tell you that if they dropped it, it would go
off? Oh, yes, yeah.
Some men in the Second World War would say that they weren't told that if they dropped it, it would go off.
We know about that, yeah.
So they were a worrying weapon.
Yeah, as well as the operator and the other bloke on the other side.
Now, what were they like as a weapon? Well, I mean, what were they used for? Or what was their range? What do you think they're for?
That was from close order stuff, you know, when you can, you know, close up with the enemy and built up areas where you go, belt the door open, spray the room, so that sort of job. And with the grenade, they
were they accurate at that range?
When you're in that circumstance, you don't come up to the it's a rough alignment more than anything with them. What I thought, anyway. I mean,
so close quarter, heavy volume of fire for a short time.
Yeah. I don't think I ever fired one of them on a target. Like, you know, you get the shape of a man. You fire at them, but you don't. It's a burst. It's not a single shot.
Now, any other guns or hand grenades you mentioned? I mean, did you do hand grenade training at this stage?
Oh, yes, in training. Yeah.
Now, what was hand grenade training like? Or the group? Was it milled bombers? Imagine.
Is that what they called them? 38 grenade. 38 grenade, I think it was. We had blanks for a start, but they didn't tell us that because they wanted to make you aware of the good side and the bad side, you know, for training purposes. And they said, don't throw it up in the air, he said, because it would drop back into the trench where you are. You've got to, you know, just rough common sense, really, because some of the lads, apart from going home and working in a factory, they've never done any bloody thing. And, of course, we had one or two mishaps, and they all said, when you throw it, make sure you know where it lands, because if it don't go off, you've got to fire at it with a rifle and bits like that. So this was all going through your mind, the safety sides of it. Of course, things did happen, but even when they was alive and all that came from, we used to have to clean them and put the detonator in there.
Yeah, how did you do that?
Take the base plate off, and you get your detonators, and there will always be a corporal or lance corporal at your side while you're doing this to make sure you. And he said, don't get no grit up that tube, the grenade, because when you stick the detonator in, it'll explode because it'll rupture the thing. It's like the plunger coming down the other way, something. And I thought, God, blimey. I was sweating a bit just doing that, you know. But when you've done it once, it's hold at in it, sort of thing.
Was there a special way of throwing? Were they still doing the sort of round cricket?
Oh, yeah. The
straight arm.
Yeah, so you get the arm on a radius, not up in the air job, like they was trying to do. Wanting to get to the height and distance.
So you don't let go of it too early, so it goes straight up. No. You take it right over. And would you practice this in the range from a trench?
Yes, a proper dugout, yeah.
And what were the incidents? Were you near any, or were you just aware that there was odd incidents going
well,
on?
Well, there was like... See, because there used to be two platoons, both all the intake would be down there. And, I can remember a couple of them where they had a fire at the grenade where when it didn't go off down the road. But the other episode was there was, two or three when they were blanks, you know, where they got no depth, where they would give it that and it come up and it dropped it. Because and the corporal had say, right, everybody down! And they'd be jumping all over each other. And it was but it should just show to the...
So it's training. I mean, they're getting used to what to do if it had happened.
Yeah.
Now, did you see any other grenades? Because there were other grenades, phosphorus and
we had them later on.
But not at the training.
No.
Now, were you introduced to the light mortar? The 2-inch mortar?
2-inch mortar.
Were you introduced to that on training?
No.
Now, what? Any other weapons you saw, the Piet or anything like that?
No.
So what about, I forgot, bayonet. Training. I should have done that with a rifle, really. But did you do any serious bayonet training?
Well, that was in with the assault course, more or less. I was up in there. But then we did have a course, like, apart from the assault course, where it was these frames up, and they made you charge it with fixed bayonets on this course, stabbing on. I got sent back because I never shaved enough to put them. You're supposed to frown them to death, so they turn around and run.
So you had trouble getting there.
But I haven't got the larynx for the wrong tone. But hardly been shown it once, you don't do it again.
Did you think it was a serious weapon of war at the time?
What, the bayonet? I should imagine it'd be very handy in certain conditions. Yeah.
So it was worthwhile learning still.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Now, any other forms of training you were doing? I mean, did you do any sort of tactical training? You know, going out, digging trenches, or pretending to attack?
Not while I was in training.
So that comes later.
Yeah.
Anything else you remember about your training that you were doing? Any other training? It looks like mainly drill and weapons training and PT.
Sunday morning used to be a good morning. So we thought, we've got nothing on Sunday morning, we'll have a bit of a lay-in. No such word in training, a lay-in. So what we said, we had a bloke called Paddy Malloy, a colour sergeant, and you say, "But lads, 8 sides in a quarter hour, the lorry's ready to take the church." But C of E would be the main wagon. He said, any Roman Catholics or any other denominations? Is that the right word, denomination? Yeah, and he said, you'll be dropped off accordingly. I said, no, not today. And some of one or two of them jokers, atheists, I'm atheist. So. And I thought, we've done this. And I thought, righto, we're going to have an easy morning now. And he'd come back about a quarter hour later. He says, "Got a few fatigues here. The blokes, they jumped out of bed that quick. It's unbelievable." I knew what the bugger was. It would probably be cold fatigues, cookouts fatigues. And that's how he used to get us. And that's the truth, honestly. I'm not bullshitting.
And what was church parade like?
It was great. We used to go to that I told you that old church there. That was their regiment.
In the centre of...
Yeah, as we come down this morning. That was their regimental church, that's St. Sepper's church. And because we used to go there for the service, of course, you'd noise with the boots. They would pack the locals, there was, God, blimey, what's the noise coming in? And of course, we didn't have lots of claims where there were berries, not much shape in it, even then, when we got to that stage. And the thing was, after that, you were free, make your own way back to camp. We said, there's only a bus ride, or you can walk it if you fancied it. Because we used to go to the nearest booze up the street and antagonise the Yanks that was in town.